went to parties, it was always the outsider that came in that you kind of looked at once in a while.
Oh. They didn't marry so much the people that were there. They were kind of part of the family,
we
like marrying your brother or something.
Yes. I that didn't always happen, but as I look back, it seems to me it was that way. That's perhaps the reason.
Well, that's
that
a,
we didn't
that's a sociological
fall in love with each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a sociological point.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think so.
And you can't tell me that whatever you...
And when I went away to school, I came out of the farm life. And I didn't have too much. There was a different social life in town, in the towns.
It was quite different.
I belonged to that farmer's life. And the farm boys, and the girls, and the friends. And I hardly knew anybody in town. But I began to get acquainted, like Grace Blythe and some of the families like that that I was with, the girls. And social stratus in Lisbon, and not so much in Milner. Milner was much more, in a way, everybody was alike. But in Lisbon, there were the bankers' wives and a few other women who were the social leaders in town. And they would have their parties and so on. And the young people, they were pretty well-to-do, and they went off to college. I was one of the few that went to college from the country.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else, they didn't.
Yeah, well, that's a point.
And
the boys went more than the...
I didn't exactly feel inferior, but I felt different.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got into what might be called the college life and the intellectual life,
mm-hmm.
and much more religious life than I had experienced, and I liked it, but my main interest was to have a good time. I had a good time,
mm-hmm.
and probably compensate for any inferiority I had by excelling, although well, that was a little doubtful. It was awfully hard to excel in anything you couldn't be interested in.
Mm.
And so I've had a lot of sympathy for my pupils all the 28 years I taught.
Did you feel any inferiority towards men in learning?
Men and women? Yes, maybe.
Marion had so much competition with men, she felt she had to...
Well, I didn't even try. You know, I would have liked to been something different from a teacher at times. I was pretty well satisfied. But I thought I was interested in psychology.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no field for that at all. And I thought I was. I don't know how much interested I was. And I never thought of being a college teacher, which I should have tried to be. I thought if I could be a public school teacher, a high school teacher, that'd be enough.
Mm-hmm.
I never did any more than that.
Did you ever think about writing or something like that?
I didn't until later life.
Or painting?
And I didn't even think about painting, although I did some watercolor when I first... when I'd been teaching when I was teaching in Staples. That was about 10 years before I was married. And they were good.
Mm-hmm.
I have only one of them. I gave the rest away. And I should have continued, but things happened. I did some China painting too. So I just drifted along, went from place to place to teach. But now, in going back to college, I held my own, as far as that's concerned. And many times I thought I was a little smarter than some of them. But like mathematics, especially when it came to higher algebra and trigonometry and calculus or some old thing, I just didn't do anything in that. They passed me anyway.
I couldn't learn arithmetic.
And I couldn't figure out. And I guess whatever mathematics I did get anywhere in, I owe to his fundamental analysis of everything. And I didn't, as I've said before, I didn't care too much about physics. I didn't care for the scientific world very much. I would now,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't then.
Yeah.
And what I liked was literature and poetry and things like that. And I liked German. I had a year of French, too.
You've probably been good in languages, too.
I would have been. I could have been good in languages. I had a year of French. And I had all that Latin. And I almost had a year of Greek, but I found out that there was no conflict, that I could take another English course instead, and I took it right away. Mm-hmm. I almost had to have Greek. I would have had a Master of Arts degree if I had taken Greek.
Uh-huh.
But Master of Science is what I got. Not Master, Bachelor. And, can do about anything. We can do anything we really want to do. It's harder for some than others, maybe. You have to work harder at it.
Well, that's what they
but
say.
I think, as far as singing is concerned, there might be some exception if you don't have the ear. But I think anybody can think. If they just loosen up and go after it. And it just seems to me, as I look back at my life, if I really wanted to do anything and sacrificed a little, you know, wasn't lazy, I think I could do it. You can learn to sew, you can learn to do anything. And I hear so many and say, well, I couldn't paint. I can't draw a straight line. Well, it's the old saying, if you can't draw a straight line, draw a crooked line.
Probably is true. I'm sure we don't use our ability.
We don't use it. We don't use ourselves at all. We don't think we can. And in my day, they didn't believe in encouraging kids too much. They might think they might get conceited. You had to be a little bit humble. Maybe a lot humble.
Mm-hmm.
And so we didn't know what we could do.
That's right. And especially with women.
Yeah. It wasn't that way with men. They were supposed to go out in the world and conquer.
Yeah. And boast.
Yes.
And
that's
crow.
All right.
And crow.
And old Andy Devitt. When I came home from teaching that summer of the First World War, and they came over and called me and came over the horse and buggy and asked me to go
to
and hear Walter Thomas Mills.
That was very unusual, I think.
It was an indication of what kind of people they were.
Mm-hmm.
Strong was from Maine, I think, originally, and Andy was one of the Irish neighbors. But they didn't either one take their wives.
No.
But they took me. And of course I was older than their children, but not too much older.
They
were the older generation.
They looked upon you as different. You weren't going to be in the kitchen.
They apparently
You weren't
that.
In the kitchen.
No. I wasn't in the kitchen very much.
Well, the other women were, that's
realize that either. I just wanted to not exactly get out of there, because every time I came home, I came back and relaxed and enjoyed myself and too with them.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a different life. It was I was much more natural at home. I didn't have anything to speed me up. And I could eat the food I liked and
you sort of
go to a dance and so on. I lived in two worlds.
Two worlds, Now that's important, two worlds.
I lived in two mm-hmm. worlds. And then there was the other world, which I never got into, was a society of Lisbon, you know,
mm-hmm.
where they were not the intellectual world either. The college world was democratic.
Mm-hmm. They were the rich. The owners.
Yeah, in their own way. Although there were some of them there that came from better homes and had better clothes. Not many, but they all were about on the same boat as far as money was concerned. And of course, I was foreign born, and I realized that too. But they were all very nice to me. Irish is very good for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because any prejudice that the whole family might have had and did have against the Irish when they came, they brought with them from Norway.
Mm-hmm.
The Norwegians were far prejudiced against the Irish.
Mm-hmm.
But that they lost.
That's very interesting.
And I know my father, I think always, he really thought more of his Irish neighbors than he did of the Scandinavians that were farther south and in the Lutheran Church.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we belonged to that Lutheran Church after a while, I guess. We went, but we were not very Orthodox, any of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've told about the bringing up in the old country.
Mm-hmm.
My father's family, they went to church, but for social reasons, not to be saved, especially.
Mm-hmm.
But my grandmother was very, very much concerned about salvation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'll tell this here. My youngest, my aunt, the youngest of that of the family, my mother's youngest sister, told me when she came to visit me after my mother had died, and she told me that she had got a new woven dress. They wove the material, and it was brown. It was dyed brown instead of just left gray.
Mm-hmm.
And her mother said she would sure go to hell because she would be so vain with that brown dress.
Yeah.
My aunt told me that.
My grandmother was that way.
She was?
Marion's mother.
Who was?
Marion's mother.
Marion's mother.
She was very... She never allowed you to wear bright clothes. She said only the prostitutes in town wore bright clothes. I liked bright clothes. I put a rose on my hat or something.
Yeah,
And she'd say, "What are you, just one of those girls from the White House," it was called.
Uh-huh. Well, I don't know. They certainly got away from it all. They all like bright things.
No.
Pretty clothes and everything.
It's wonderful. I never...
So that I find out what I should have, get a good examination. But in order to get an examination, I had to go through all the works and be examined from beginning to end. And I finally landed with a woman doctor. When I had, what did they call it? Gynecology or whatever they call it. You know, that kind of an examination. Well, while I was waiting, I think it was, a man came in and sat down beside me, you know, on the bench on the outside. And there was another woman waiting to go in, too. But he sat down there. He looked kind of like a farmer, and just a working man, kind of working. He sat there thinking and looking at himself. doctor says, a woman doctor. You know, he'd been examined by a woman doctor. He didn't know what to make of it, you know. And he kept grumbling like that for a long time. And finally I says, well, we have to put up with men doctors all the time, I said to him, and then he shut up. This is really funny.
Yeah, but you know.
Early in North Dakota, there was complete freedom of thought and thinking, and as far as I can see, they hadn't gotten around to brainwash people too much. There was nobody there to do it. People got, and as I remember, the farmers never talked about much of anything else except the weather, and the difficulties that they had, the injustices of farming. You know, they I think I have mentioned that, how they were cheated in every way.
Yeah.
And they protested, but not to any, not enough, but just to try to get candidates for office that would do something. And that wasn't very easy. They were quite disillusioned, as I remember. And in their talking among themselves, I remember they talked about free trade and protective tariff. I remember that as one of the things they discussed. And I know the teacher in the country school, he was a man and a good Republican, he believed in the protective tariff. And he said that would help the farmers. My father didn't think so. He said it wouldn't help the farmers at all. They would get the same things that they did have. It protected the businessmen. Well, that was the talk at home. And I don't remember too much what how the Devitts and the neighbors talked, but generally speaking, they were opposed to it. Well, I didn't know what to think as I got into college, but then I found that a professor of economics said the same thing as my father did.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had considerable respect for his judgment, which
he was
might
right,
not have had
true.
Otherwise.
Uh-huh.
But all in all, at college, there wasn't too much talk about economics, except that they did speak of the long working hours that the people had. And you know, at that time, they certainly had child labor, and I guess a 12-hour day. Well, they had that way into 1920, 10-hour day. And when they got the 8-hour day, that's quite late compared
to them. Yeah, oh yeah.
So at college, there wasn't too much politics. There was some reform. And by that time, I knew a little bit about socialism. But I had the idea that when people were ready for it, they could govern themselves.
There was a big vote in Dakota in 1908 for socialism. Yeah, that was the Debs special that went through there. They had I don't know what it was, but it was a big vote for.
Well, there was that talk, but somehow or other I wasn't matured enough, but I accepted it. I never was against it, but I didn't. I just didn't understand the necessity. You know, I wasn't fundamental. I was utopian.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's what it was. And my father never even fell, in a way, in that election of 1912 when Woodrow Wilson got in and Teddy Roosevelt. Now, in North Dakota, the Historical Society doesn't seem to be able to write or talk about anything but Teddy Roosevelt. They have a picture of his cabin. They go on and on and on. I quit taking their magazine.
Uh-huh.
I was fed up on it. And they just don't seem to do anything over there. They didn't. Now maybe they. And I know my father didn't fall for Teddy Roosevelt.
He didn't?
No. He didn't. He voted a Democrat. He was always a Democrat, as far as I can remember. But I suppose he was a radical, but they didn't talk much about it. I don't think he was radical, but he was liberal.
Mm-hmm.
And I never heard him. Well.
Well, it was liberal to be a Democrat then.
Yes.
In that.
But in that movement that there were there, of course, he didn't live. He lived through the period that led up to the Nonpartisan League. And he was a part of that cooperative movement they had before that.
Mm-hmm.
And where they had been promised everything and never got anything. How was I going to say? But we didn't get beyond reform. Oh, about the Democrats, I think I told you about the neighbor that came, and my father wanted to know what he was, a Republican. He said, we got enough of them around here.
Yeah.
And
but you know, the Nonpartisan League went in under the Republican ticket. They just called themselves Republicans.
They got their own candidates
mm-hmm.
in.
Mm-hmm.
And did I mention there were two. There's one story that I haven't told. That is, Frank Strong, this neighbor, was quite a leader in the Nonpartisan League. But our township, Scoville Township, was 100% nonpartisan.
Oh, what?
Yeah, everybody was nonpartisan. All the Irish, the rest of them too.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't true about the Alliston Township, where they were all Scandinavians. They were much more conservative than the Irish.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing, that's one reason why, when there is this tremendous anti-Catholicism, even among my own friends,
mm-hmm.
I don't see it. I could go into something else there. But the Catholics certainly can hold their own in being liberal as against, let's say, the Lutherans or even the whole Protestant setup.
Well,
I think
the church, the organized church, is a terrible thing.
Yes.
I mean, you know, because
the Protestantism with that Martin Luther, who joined the princes in that 30 Years' War, I think it was, against the peasants. He was with the princes. He was with the ruling class there. And from what I can understand, the Reformation wasn't so much Reformation as it was taking the church along with the rising bourgeois movement.
Yeah.
And they have that. They have the Protestant church as a base. Now, that doesn't mean that the Catholics were too good. They went conservative, too. But they have more tradition of socialism than the Protestants haven't any. At least I don't see it. And I thought I experienced that in North Dakota during that time. So our neighborhood was 100% Nonpartisan League. And I would come home. I wouldn't find out too much about it when I was away teaching. The newspapers didn't tell it, and I didn't know it. I didn't get the pamphlets like Lafarge, The Right to Be Lazy, or any of the rest of it. I didn't know. We didn't know.
Uh-huh.
And I'd come home, and there they were. They'd have picnics, and every Sunday there was a Nonpartisan League picnic.
Oh, that's good.
And they had speakers coming all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was really exciting.
Some of the great minds were coming there to speak.
Yes. And I wish I could remember some of them, but I just don't. We just had those speakers, and we'd have a table set out, picnic table. Everybody would bring something to eat.
Mm-hmm.
They'd put it all on. They'd cook the coffee. And that was in all the farm homes. We have it. I have a picture of us having one of those, the people standing along. So we didn't think anything about it. There wasn't. Everybody went. That was a picnic to the
Diggers
had.
Uh-huh. That was a great time of the meeting.
Hmm?
The meeting.
Yeah, the meetings were good. They had the speakers, of course, and towards the last there, later, the IVA got organized, and of course they tried to have meetings of their own in the schoolhouses. Well, the farmers just about tore them to pieces. Mm-hmm. That is literally, you know, figuratively. They didn't have any argument. The farmers knew their stuff, and those IVA people coming out from town.
What was the IVA?
The Independent Voters Association.
Oh.
That they organized in town as against the
The
Nonpartisan League. Another thing, the independent voters had to watch their step, because after all, they were dependent on the farmers for business. And the farmers, every once in a while, they'd boycott somebody for a while.
I heard where they could destroy a town, the farmers, by not going there. The town would...
Exactly what they could do. And I don't know too much about the details, but I do know that they decided that they wouldn't vote for certain people. And they organized cooperatives. There were quite a few cooperatives in Lisbon during that time. Now, Milner was much more friendly to the Nonpartisan League people, with the result that they got along better with him. And Milner got kept their trade and everything. But there was quite a lot of feeling against the people in town. That is the background that I had, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing, while in college, there was a sort of a little inferiority feeling as against the people in town that could dress better and so on. But to offset that, there was a certain respect for working people. Going back to the hired men, the people that came out of the lumber camps in the spring and went back there in the winter and worked all summer, there was I shouldn't tell in connection with them, but I'll tell it now. There was a certain dignity about them. They were not abject by any means. You know, that around towards that time, there were the workers of
IWW.
And while the farmers didn't like the big farmers didn't like the IWW, they had to respect them. And they did. There's certain dignity about labor. And of course, my folks, who were foreign born, they practically scorned anybody that had to be waited on.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
And so I learned to feel guilty every time anybody waited on me. All my life I felt that every person ought to take care of himself.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good, that's a democratic feeling.
Well, that is something that's just in me, and I feel it yet. Then I have to offset that with the fact that I'm aged, too. and we had to do good work. My mother made me scrub the floor, and I had to scrub it over again if I got those streaks that, you know, when you put pieces together in an old floor, you know, which I didn't like very well.
The good work was.
But I did it. Not part of it.
Good work was respected, I mean.
And we girls, we ironed our own clothes from the time we were able to, and washed, and the work. So in that way, I don't know, I got along. And at college, the people were that really thought this, no doubt, the same as I do. They were people that had work. The teachers were, they were wonderful people. And because they didn't act or even feel aristocratic, even though they were intellectuals. I remember P.G. Knowlton. He was very fine. He was so nice to my father when they rode on the train together, and they talked and talked, and I thought that was wonderful. And
who was
wonderful.
Knowlton?
He was a professor of philosophy and religion there at college.
At Fargo?
In Fargo, that small college. Yeah, he was a wonderful person. He's the one that taught evolution and its relation to religious thought.
Mm-hmm.
And he studied in Germany, had a doctor's degree from Germany. Tall and angular, peaked beard, long arms, and all angles. I've got to paint him on the campus of I've painted the Fargo College, but I haven't fixed up the campus. I'm going to pin him on there somewhere, if I can. I have his picture with his two children. He gave that to me when I came through after I graduated. Quite a while. Gift.
Is that the same school that's there now in Fargo?
No, it's not there.
Oh.
They united with Yankton College.
Oh.
And I think I told you how I think of Yankton. I belong to the Alumni Association because now I am an alumnus of Yankton. But they came to ask me, to a dinner, which I couldn't go to. We have dinners once in a while, but most of the Fargo College people are dead now. But there are some younger ones. And then when I read, I told them I had read that they were having Judd for a commencement speaker, and I said, I'm not going to contribute. Yeah, they wanted some contribution to a hall or something. I says, you go to Hearst. If you've got Judd, you'll get your money from Hearst.
Well, what is the school that's there now?
Party, you know, we began to know something about Grant's administration and all the stealing that was going on, and the westward movement. And the farmers, by the way, out there, they had all this experience, but I haven't mentioned the land experience, where there were so many real estate people that would sell farms, buy and sell. They were real estate, or not buy and take them back, because they would sell a farm on the average. There was one farm that was nobody could make a living on it, and he had to let go, and then the real estate people sell it to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not in very good repute, but they lived there in Lisbon, and their wives were the society of the town, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
they got rich.
They got pretty well to do.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And they thought they were somebody. And of course, they didn't think too much of us, I guess. But they were more aggressive than the regular business people. And I remember, my father didn't have any use for me. He didn't care about anything.
Were they mostly Anglos, Yankees?
Yeah, they were Yankees. I can't think of anyone. The Scandinavians and the Irish were farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that came in, the business people, the bankers, well, there was one banker who was a Norwegian. But they were Yankees that came from the East.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most of them in Minneapolis did.
Mm-hmm. So there was a sort of a subconscious idea that they were parasites.
They were.
Well, and then when I went
not out. Not only parasites, vultures. So then you got out of college, then what?
Yeah, and then I taught, and there wasn't much stimulation in any way. Some of the teachers' meetings were very good through those years. I remember we had, that was one speaker, I remember some of them. I had one speaker that, heard one speaker come, I don't know, it was quite a few years later, and said that now that you've got an education, you want, something like this, he wondered if we considered success as it being trained to claw your way to the top, on top of, over the bodies of other people. Use the term, claw your way to the top.
You remember that.
And I don't think I remember many others. Anyway, somehow, in those days, they weren't afraid to say anything, and they often did say something. But not enough to realize that I never understood capitalism, really, until I read Marx and studied it.
When was that?
Oh, that wasn't until I came to Minneapolis, about 32. The first time, before I went back. In my 30s. That is, I didn't understand it, you know, how scientific.
Mm-hmm.
But as I accepted socialism, social ownership, I could see nothing wrong with it.
Mm-hmm. Where were you during the First World War?
First World War?
I mean, all that, when the North Dakota was against the war and all, were you in
yeah,
it?
Yeah, we were against the war, too.
You were?
Oh, yes. That we were. That was when the Walter Thomas Mills came out, and when we heard him, and I went to his trial in Fargo, we were all together against the war. That was the Nonpartisan League were, yeah.
Yeah, there was quite a lot of
violence. There was form there, and they were against it, so that we were against the First World War, and I think pretty much our whole county was. That is, except maybe the rich, but I wasn't with people that were for it.
You didn't have any.
Of course, I was teaching, but there they, and even there, I didn't think much of the war.
But you didn't have anybody violence or
dying.
You didn't have any violence about it.
No, we didn't have violence, but I think the reason that there wasn't violence in our neighborhood. There was violence. I heard about it here in Minnesota, and there no doubt was some there. But I didn't. It wasn't in my environment, and that was because there.
Well, didn't the young men have to go to the war? What did they do?
There weren't too many went. They didn't get around to it.
Oh.
You know. Some of them that went maybe went willingly.
Well, they.
I can't remember that there was any disturbance about
them.
It. Hmm?
You didn't have a choice in the First World War, you know. Most young men were.
Well, I guess some of them went, but there wasn't any organized resistance either, I don't think, at that time. They just talked about it. But they didn't. Their farmers didn't like. They were making money. I wasn't home all the time, of course. Some of them didn't like rationing. They had to be rationed then, too, I think.
A lot of North Dakota, Minnesota boys were killed in the war. They always take an out-of-proportion number of the farm.
Well,
guys.
That was probably but not in our community. It may be, I don't remember. The only thing I remember is that They didn't like the war.
Where were you teaching during the war?
Now wait till I figure out. When was that war?
1917.
Where was I before I taught in Caledonia?
Caledonia?
I taught down in Caledonia.
Minnesota?
Southern Minnesota.
Gee, that's a beautiful place. I just fell in love with that place last time I was down there.
Well,
do you know Oscar Christensen?
Oscar, yes, I do. I know him.
You know, he comes from down there, Caledonia and...
Well, I thought he came from Moorhead. Maybe you don't know the same one I do. He lives in St. Paul now?
Mm-hmm. I went down with him to see his cousins.
Oh.
That's the most beautiful countries, like Switzerland.
Yes, it's beautiful down there. Houston?
Uh-huh. I guess that's what they call it, the Switzerland of Minnesota. And his family were such great people. You know, they'd been there for three generations.
Well, that must be another Christensen, I wonder.
Well, he lived in Moorhead, I think.
Then it's the same
sometime.
One. And I see him every once in a while.
He's a wonderful...
He writes to me.
He's a wonderful person.
Isn't he, though? Uh-huh. He's so nice.
He went to Expo.
Yeah.
He goes all around.
Did he send you one of
uh-huh.
his stories?
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's good. I'll have to tell him I've been visiting you.
Yeah. We're very fond of each other.
He'd be very happy. He goes to the...
Unitarian.
To the... senior citizens, you know.
He's
that.
A great dancer. He can
dance. I told him that I'd like to have a dance with him sometime there, but I didn't know whether I'd make it or not.
He's a wonder. You know, I got him to write the story of his family, which is in the Historical Society.
It is. He
yes.
has written that.
You should read it some. It's quite a big manuscript.
Uh-huh.
And it's all about, it's wonderful about his grandfathers and fathers.
Uh-huh.
Is I mean, it's really a beautiful thing. Someday when you're there at the Historical Society, it's in the manuscript section.
Uh-huh.
It's really beautiful.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, I'll tell him about it. He'd be so happy.
Yeah, he's a great man, I think. He's really a... I'd like to have somebody do a portrait of him, you know, that straight up and down, those great big hands he has, those great carpenter's hands.
I'll have to see if I can get his picture. And, you know, I had Oscar's niece, or adopted niece, I ought to write her up as the evolution of a Republican into a hippie.
Oh,
well, that's exactly what has happened.
Really?
Did I?
No, you didn't tell me.
I'm going to tell her. I can tell it right now.
All right.
You know, Randall married a woman much younger than he, and she had this little daughter. She was about 8 years old, I think, 6 or 8. And, of course, she grew up in that completely Republican atmosphere. Now, Randall, Oscar's brother, there's no one any better. But he was a real Republican, and he couldn't see anything else all his life. And he accepted everything at its value, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
And so she grew up that way. And now, in the meantime, she had the problems of a teenager. She got very religious and fundamentalist and so on. And then they had that problem with her, and she'd go out and talk to Ruth, who'd been a YW secretary. And they were all friendly to me and Oscar, but she'd come over and she'd look up some of our religious books and read them. And she hardly spoke to me, for some reason or other. But we were friendly, but, you know, I wasn't the kind of a person that she'd go to. That wouldn't need to go into the book, I don't think. And so time went on, and I don't know whether she ever graduated from McAllister. She didn't have the right kind of credits. But she gave up the fundamentalism, And she went on, and finally, and at McAllister, she was one of the Republican Club. And I'd see her once in a while, and that was all that was in the family. I talked to her. First thing I know, we were there at Thanksgiving. Now, that's not long ago, about 2-3 years ago. And she was at Thanksgiving, Wendell was living. They're still Republicans, but Mary had begun to question. So she wanted to talk to me. We were in another room after we'd eaten, and we talked. And she said, you know, I haven't earned any money. I feel that the money I'm spending is, I haven't earned it. She said to me, well, I said, Mary, Doris Duke hasn't earned any money either, and it doesn't bother her. And we talked quite a while. And after that, she has come to see me, and we've talked quite a bit about the economics. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember the different times, but you know, when they had that big march on Washington, I kept seeing Mary there, and I had no reason to see her, to think she was there.
Wow.
Well, she called me up and said, I want to come and see you. I went to Washington. She wanted to give a report. So now I'm the one that she comes to see, and she doesn't.
Oh, isn't it?
The rest of them. And we talk about religion. We talk about everything. After that, she came. She brought a young man to see. You know, this is quite a while. When the march was on, she brought a young man one night. And he was very much disturbed and unhappy about war, and he thought we'd always have war and everything. I tried to make him think differently. That, you know, the same things that I would say. But he was disturbed. But anyway, we had a long talk there. She brought him. And then she was over another time, quite lately. Now, what was it she...
Is something. She
getting more? Anyway, this David had gone west, again. He had given up his teaching job and had gone west, and she said he'd have to do it to keep from committing suicide. I think he joined the hippie colony or something out west. But she said he won't do it. Now, the last time I talked to her, oh yes, she came for a long talk. I explained, I suppose I oversimplify, but I think you have to. I think these people that talk economics and try to explain Marxian economics cover too much ground.
Well,
they talk all over it, and they analyze everything to death.
Yeah.
And you just have to talk about the three fundamentals or something like that. And finally she said, I am a hippie. And she had an appointment that evening to go to some kind of a meeting. She's living by herself over on the campus, but she isn't studying, she's just living there.
Oh, does she have money?
Yeah. Her mother has all that Hawkins money that Wendell had.
Oh.
So they're well fixed. And they have turned over to Mary enough so she can live without working. But anyway, she tells me she feels so much better every time she sees me.
That's good.
And I feel kind of good about it.
Yeah.
Because I was the one that didn't amount to very much. Now I'm the one that's helping her.
That's great. If you live long enough, it comes back.
Oh, yeah. Well, she'll be all right. She'll be all right. I asked her, does your mother know you are a hippie? And she said, I think she suspects it. But her mother is quite, I tell you, her mother is one of these very, very cautious people and doesn't want to rock the boat, the economic boat, at all.
Uh-huh.
And especially when Wendell was living, because she wanted to be sure to round up the whole money, I think. But it's perfectly right. She She's certainly been a great help in the Hawkins family, and she's been wonderful to me all the time.
Where does she live?
She lives in an apartment.
In Minneapolis?
In Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. She has one of those swank apartments, beautiful apartment. I don't know whether she, it's a three-bedroom apartment and overlooking Lake Calhoun. It's just lovely. You see the sunset every night and all that. They may move now. Wendell died in the spring. And she took Mary in there in Florida, where they only went for about a week. She and her mother, Mary and her mother went. And Mary takes beautiful photographs. Mary has written a novel, but I heard nothing about it. I guess she hasn't got it published. And she's doing such beautiful photography now. Mm-hmm. Anything she does well. Mm-hmm. But she seemed kind of lonely for a long time, but I'm kind of glad she's with the hippies. She's got companionship and interest and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's good.
Yes, I think it is. Have they got many in Minneapolis? Do they have a colony?
Oh, yes, I think they do. I told you about my meeting with them at the Unitarian Church.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. But they haven't been back since, or I haven't been there when they have been back. But I'm going to church next Sunday, the Sunday after I get home. And because I want to tell Lehman about going to the Unitarian Church here,
mm-hmm.
and tell them about my experiences here in Santa Fe and my being with you. And I may see Oscar Christensen there too.
Oh, if you do, give him my love.
I sure will.
That's that big tall fellow, isn't
he? Yeah.
I sure will.
I love him.
Oscar Christensen kisses me when he sees me.
I wonder if he's going to kiss me.
Huh?
I wonder if he'll kiss me.
Oh, he might.
But
you aren't an old timer. He might not.
He says he just learned how to kiss, after he got old.
Said that. I guess
he didn't know. No, nobody ever kissed him. You know, he came from those rigid.
Well, I tell you, he was in the Socialist Party when we were there. When we started and went into it. And I guess he used to come to meetings way from Moorhead.
Oh.
And we had him over to supper sometimes. He'd sit there at our kitchen table. That's the only place we had. We had rumors all over the rest of the place. And we'd sit there and talk at 6:25 when we were by the university.
No, I was to the Unitarian once, and then when I come back, the people that I met, they all remembered me. They all spoke to me. You know,
oh,
and he was one of them. I remember because, you know, he's so much taller than I am.
Who?
Mm-hmm. I think he's a handsome man.
This guy you're talking about.
Oscar Christensen.
Yeah, but you never saw him, did you?
Oh, at church.
Huh?
At church.
At church. Oh,
yeah,
yes, you met him. Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, the reason I noticed him so in particular, he was so much taller than I am.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, as a rule, I'm about
tall
as tall as they come. But he was quite a lot taller.
Uh-huh.
So I always remembered him.
Uh-huh.
What kind of experiences did you have at what's the name of the place, in Little Switzerland, where you were teaching? That must be an interesting community.
At Caledonia.
Yeah, Caledonia.
Well, I guess Caledonia was quite conservative. Yeah, it was conservative. Caledonia is all conservative.
So. You know, there was a man who had a newspaper there. He was I forget the name of it. He was a Republican, but he was angry. He had a big fight with the Historical Society because he said his newspaper was the oldest in the state. The Hoka Chief, it was called.
Oh.
If you go to the Historical Library,
yeah.
look up that paper. It's been published since 1858. The Hoka Chief.
The Hoka Chief.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that is a Hoka.
And this guy had this paper for all these years.
Oh.
And he was really a radical. I mean, he didn't know, he thought he was a Republican, you know, but he was a Lincolnian Republican.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well.
And he was a great newspaper. And there was a guy,
you know, down to the Radical bookstore. And I got some literature there. And I began to read, but I didn't study, you know. But it seemed to be in pretty much in line with my thinking and with our thinking. Now, when it came to the Russian Revolution, well, any trouble there was there, commotion or whatever it was, I thought, well, you have a complete change of authority, and you have a small base on top, and now you turn that over and put the lot of them on top, and there must be quite a lot of readjustment. And that's the way I thought of it. I didn't think of it as a complete economic change until I began to read it. Until later, I began to read I read the Russian Constitution and all the rest of it that they'd done. Even then, there wasn't much except criticism and talk about free love and all the other bad things they did to be read in our papers that we read. And I didn't know very much about the aftermath of World War I, except that a friend of Oscar's, who was a farmer in Akeley, had committed suicide because of the persecution. He was a German. And that made us realize that how much there was of that, how unjust the feeling was and everything.
Oh, it was very strong.
How horrible it was, really.
You remember?
Well, on that Sunday, about 11, I don't remember what day Japan attacked.
December 7th.
He said that Japan was bound to attack. That Japan would attack the United States.
This was before the attack?
Yeah, this is before. And I said, about how long will it be? About a week. In about a week. And it was in less than 10 days that it happened. And he said, being about. But I'll never forget him. Well, I'll never forget him many times. But when he'd come to the social science club, he'd let loose, you know. He'd get up and stand up like this. And just, oh, damn sons of bitches. Every time he'd action, he'd stand like this. Nose up. And then he'd tell what they're doing, and they're going to get what they got coming.
God, I'll use it.